You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Now joined by one of the most exciting tight ends in football, Chiefs star.
Yes, sir.
Super Bowl champion.
Accolade.
Travis Kelce in the building, big dog. How's it going
out
there?
What's going on, guys?
What's up, bro?
Appreciate you guys having me. Hope you guys looking sharp as always.
Hey, my dog.
I'm looking a little sharper. Thank you for the compliment. hey, big dog, you're 8-year vet, man. You know how to spend a bye week, but how are you spending yours this week?
Well, just relaxing, man. Right now, I'm on the call with you guys on behalf of Old Spice. I've been using Old Spice ever since I was a kid trying to shave something that was on my face that really wasn't even there. But nowadays, I'm partnering with Old Spice as a proud partner with other NFL athletes. Their 10-year commitment to increase high school graduation rates amongst young men. And it's such an important deal for myself, knowing that I think that it all starts in adolescence. Doing the right thing at a young age sets you up for your life and your future. And what better way than to start or graduate high school?
Hey, man, before we get in the ball, bro, I'm going to go off script because you my dog. You big on style, right? I'm just calling you Killer Trav because that's the social media handles. I'm not calling you Travis Kelce right now, okay? Straight Killer Trav.
Always Killer Trav, baby.
That's it. Why is fashion, style, all that so important to you? You dance when you score. Like, you've always stayed so true to you. Why is that so important, bro?
I think It's just having fun in life, man, enjoying the process that you're going through and being yourself through it all. I was mentioning it the other day. Deion Sanders, who is such that, his game was on a whole nother level, but his confidence was on a whole nother level. And that's what really, in my mind, made him great and made him such a fun player and person to follow in life is that, when you see somebody enjoying life at its fullest, And seeing them, having fun with the little things like getting dressed every single day and telling jokes and making people talk about the swagger. I mean, it's a whole lot of fun just doing that.
Then let's talk confidence on the football field. Y'all literally have only lost one game in a calendar year, but it was to the team that y'all are about to face. Be real with me, bro. It's just me, Marcellus, and you here. Are you prepared for this game like any other week? Or if you being honest, is there a little increased motivation knowing that this is the one team that's knocked y'all off in a year?
Without a doubt, there's a little motivation. And it's mostly just because of the historic rivalry that is the Chiefs and Raiders. This thing dates back to the 60s and far before my time in the football world and my time in the Chiefs uniform. A lot of people care about this game like it is their Super Bowl. I'm not going to say that's how they care. That's how they acted by doing two laps around the stadium when they won it.
You can say
city,
it.
But
you can say
I just think
it.
I think personally I take pride in every single division game that we play, knowing that. The fans, it's everything to get those division wins. And on top of that, it's the goal. It's the goal. It's the first step in getting into the playoffs, winning the division. So you got to get excited week in, week out. But especially in the division, you got to take care of business. No better time than this week against the Raiders.
Now, you made mention of it, that victory lap after the win against you guys. Where does that land in your psyche in the locker room when you hear a team does a victory lap after they beat you?
I mean, listen, if that's what you guys are doing, that's what you guys are doing. I'm just going to kind of piggyback on what Coach Reed said, and that ain't how we do it. We just go out there, we handle business on the road, and we walk away from the dub and giving everybody credit and vice versa. You know what I mean? We have full respect for everybody. If they feel like they got to do the victory lap, then, go ahead and do your thing, man. We're just going to go out here and handle our business and try and play football to our best ability. This week.
Now, walk with me here, Travis. This is not all I do, be a commentator. I'm also head of the Treasury Department because I've been tasked with putting someone's face on a $100 bill for National Tight Ends Day. So I know you may think you're the greatest tight end out there, but I got some pushback. Some people said it was George Kittle. Who's the best tight end in the land? Who should I put on my $100 bill?
Oh, man, I would say I probably would look nice on a $100 bill. You know what I mean? Me and Benjamin, we have some of the same features, and, you know, there's so many great tight ends in the league that are worthy of being on that dollar bill, big dog. Another guy we're going up against in Oakland, Waller, is having a great year. Gronk is starting to hit midseason, the late season form, looking like the Gronk that we all know he can be, or at least the spurts of it. It's exciting to see what he's been doing. And obviously George Kittle, man, second to none in his effort and his ability to play the game, man. He's an unbelievable player and unbelievable guy, man.
Hey, bro, before the season, your boys was talking about a dynasty, trying to win five, trying to win six. Hey, outdo Jordan, win seven. Does that ever cross your mind? Is that realistic to build some sort of 5-6 chip dynasty in KC?
I think it's possible. I mean, the Patriots win, what was it, 8 times in the last 12 years or something like that? I don't even know what it is. But they've kind of set the tone for you know, an organization having a decade's worth of dominance. And what we know we have in this building is something special. And we just try and take advantage of that every single day with the guys we have in this building and with the leadership we have in this building, knowing we have some of the best coaches and players that the National Football League's ever seen.
Now, you guys do have talent second to none. I mean, the offense is lethal. And even off-script plays, like when the play breaks down, you guys still find magic even in those moments. So how excited are you when plays break down and you feel like you could get something going?
Oh, man, it's like a freelance, man. At that point, it's just like you got freelance art. You can just throw Picasso up on the screen and make something look beautiful. And no better player to do that than Picasso himself, Patrick Mahomes, man. Mm. He makes plays that nobody's ever seen before, and it's extremely fun to play with a guy like that. But it's all controlled chaos, honestly. I mean, we have an unbelievable coach in Coach Andy Reid, another unbelievable offensive coordinator in Coach Eric Bieniemy, and these guys set us up for success week in and week out. And we have a little bit of freedom throughout this offense, but we have to make sure that we're doing the right thing at the right time. And not taking advantage of how much freedom we really have.
Man, I like talking ball, but I'm talking to my dog, so I just want to talk some of the fun within the game. Hey, everybody can do one dance when they score once or twice. But see, you score a lot more than once or twice, and you always got a dance move for them. How do you dictate what you're going to do when you get into the end zone, bro?
You just got to feel it out, man. You got to feel it out. You know, I mean, I know I got a few moves in my back pocket I can pull out at any point in time. It just depends on what song is on, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So depending on how I score and where we're at in the game and how much energy I have, because really it depends on how much energy I got, because if I'm exhausted, you ain't going to see me dancing out there. I can't get out there and look sloppy, man.
So you don't pre-decide what you're going to do when you score. You do it in a moment.
I did it one time, and it was when I hit the Deion Sanders shuffle, man. Iggy shuffle, man. I hit it right there at the end zone against L.A., against the Chargers, and I knew going into it I was going to hit it. And I had to get it at least one time, man. I've been doing it on the football field ever since I was a kid.
Man, let's talk about how success and how it can change you, even for a good reason, for a bad reason. It just makes a difference. It changes you. Author right now, Emmanuel Acho, best-selling author. I'm going to have to put it out there for the world to understand. Mm-hmm. He all of a sudden becomes that. Now he wears red double-breasted suits every day. Like, he a whole different animal. Hey, big dog, you become a Super Bowl champion. I want to hear from you and Patrick Mahomes. Like, what changed? What's different?
Man, what's changed? I mean, Pat was on GQ, man. He leveled up in the passing world. I'm trying to get on the cover of GQ still. What else, man? I would say, I become such a homebody. I haven't really been able to experience the how the Super Bowl can change a guy. But for the most part, it's made me want to go out and get another one, man. It makes me want to keep coming into this building and working my tail off so I can reap the benefits and be at the top of the mountain every single year, man. For me, not much has changed, man. I'm still Killer Trav with Ice.
My dog. Well, Killer Trav, I got one final one for you, bro. You're still in the prime of your career, but when it's all said and done, how does Killer Trav want to be remembered?
Ah, man, that's such a good question, man. And honestly, I just want to be remembered on the field as somebody that played their tail off for the guy around them and was accountable through that process. I got so much love for the teammates and the coaches that have given me all the success that I've had individually, but also all the success that we've had as a team. And off the field, somebody that can help influence young adults or young kids or just people in general to do better for themselves or to help somebody do better next to them. It's honestly, it's a blessing to play in the National Football League and here in Kansas City with such a heartwarming and awesome community to play for, man.
Now, we always talk about up here, Travis, that the greatest ability is availability. And you're a player that, since 2014, has played in every single regular season game. You had one healthy scratch because you guys already clinched a playoff spot. But talk to the youngsters out there about professionalism and talk about how your preparation, physically and mentally, to the game that's led to these results.
Oh, yeah. And you know it, man. The structure in your routine is everything. What you're doing outside of the facility is every bit of important as what you're doing in the facility and on the football field. You see all these awesome and top-tier athletes like LeBron James and Russell Wilson spending over $1 million on just their body, rehabbing, making sure that their athletic build is at its top peak. And it's a focus of making sure that you're being professional. When I came into the league, I had no idea what structure was for a professional athlete. I really had to learn exactly what it meant to eat right, to lift weights the right way, to almost do prehab so that you don't have to do rehab. Mm-hmm. It all works in the same way, and you guys know it better than everybody, man. Once you get off track with that, man, it's all downhill. So you just got to make sure you stay focused on the little things, even when it gets tough, man. Even when it gets tough, even more so when it gets tough. To really harp on the small things and making sure you're doing the right thing at all times.
Thanks for joining us, Travis.
My
on behalf
dog.
Of Old Spice, man. Keep balling out there, big dog.
Killer Trav.
Oh, you know it, baby. We'll see you guys soon, man. Always
all right,
fun.
All right, take care, brother. Coming up, Eagles keep on struggling, but we'll tell
watch
you
your mouth.
Wentz.
Watch your mouth, Marcellus.
Or Doug Peterson is more to blame. We know who it is.
Hey, next.
Hey, be quick yourself. Oh, I'm going to speak.
No, I just want to hold $5, Marcellus. Welcome back to Speak for Yourself. Let's head to the NBA. It's already been a crazy offseason. James Harden is reportedly focused on being traded to the Nets to join Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving and form the NBA's next super team. Russell Westbrook could also be on the move, joining other all-stars like Kawhi Leonard and Anthony Davis, who have recently switched teams. So, Marcellus, let's talk about something that we've seen for a while now. That's player mobility.
Yeah.
Is player mobility helping or hurting the NBA?
It's helping the NBA. You got to take a deep dive.
Ready?
Yeah, under the hood, and let's see how this engine works. You got to know the structure of the NBA. It's a star-driven league. So you have to erase a lot of the memory that you have from the NFL experience.
Okay.
When in our experience, we're not star-driven. We're uniformly a team-driven league. I learned this from my player association days as a player rep and looking at how they even market the sports. The NFL looks at it like, I want all of these guys to wear the same uniform. I want them all to look the same in terms of when they're out there doing their performance. You know why? Because I want them to be interchangeable, go forward despite the loss and the additions of star players. So you can look at a situation in the NBA and you can see already the contrast. They're star-driven. The players are the face cards in a deck that you need to reshuffle all the time because there's only so many face cards. There's only so many really eye-popping personas and players in the NBA. So they're reshuffling themselves, and that's a positive. Because imagine if you're sitting there in one of those small markets. You're like, when are we going to win a championship? When are we going to get a star player? What? Did they reshuffle the deck once again? Brooklyn Nets. A few years ago, it wasn't even a Brooklyn Nets in existence. Now, you're going to go out there and say you got a big three, potentially? All of that is just what the NBA has done. They've been able to reshuffle the big faces of their league constantly. And that leads us to having greater interest in the sport. So I see it as helping. I can understand there's a cause and there's a concern how it can hurt because you don't see the stability. But to me, the greater of the two is the help.
Big dog, player mobility is actually killing the NBA. But let's clarify player mobility. I'm not talking about when a player hits free agency, LeBron James, and leaves in free agency. I'm not talking about when a player hits free agency, Kevin Durant leaves and hits free agency. What? I am talking about when players force their way out of locked doors and locked contracts to go somewhere. I'm talking about Kyrie Irving forcing his way out of Boston. I'm talking about Kawhi Leonard forcing his way out of San Antonio, although health reasons, I get that. I'm talking about players forcing their way, AD, out of the Pelicans and telling them where I want to go. Here is why. So let's go back to 2006, shall we? 2006, the Suns, you got Nash, you got Amari. Mavs, you got Dirk, you got Josh Howard. Spurs, you got Tim Duncan, Manu, Tony. Shall we keep going? The Golden State Warriors, you got Baron Davis, you got Matt Barnes. You had parity across the NFL. Lakers, you had Kobe across the NBA. Yeah. You had parity, and so it increased interest. Now let's fast forward. From 2015 to 2018, Marcellus, I don't care what happened from the last week of October to the middle and last week of April. Wherever LeBron James was in, he was going to be there, and the Golden State Warriors were going to be there. All them 82 games or 82 times 30, so 2,400 games, meaningless. No matter what happens, because what we know is the Warriors and LeBron James are going to meet. We knew that for four straight years. But back in the days before player mobility, I'm not talking about like legal player mobility, I'm talking about forcing themselves out of contracts. Before that, you had 8-seed Golden State Warriors beating 1-seed Dallas Mavericks. There was so much parity in said conferences that you never knew what was going to happen. Now, I understand what you're saying, because you're talking about a game like roulette. You're talking about a game like, oh, well, there's a chance that you might not be good for eons, and then all of a sudden you might be great. But I would rather the chances of, on any given year, not any given decade, but any given year, a team might be great. Let's bring in another guy with another better opinion, NBA analyst Slick Rick. Slick, it's been too long, my brother. It's good to see you. But is player mobility helping or hurting the NBA?
Without question, it is hurting the NBA, and it's hurting it in the worst place possible, in its pocketbook. Marcellus, you are right in that the mobility creates the hope and the prospect of a superstar going someplace else, and fans get the opportunity to speculate and argue. It does sell hope, but what it does not sell are more tickets, because ultimately all of that argument and speculation is happening on social media and on TV shows like ours. But is it creating any revenue? Not for the NBA. That's their great issue, is we're more popular than ever on social media. There are more people talking about us because there's that prospect of superstars joining up in various places. But it's happening in places that the NBA cannot harness revenue-wise. Meanwhile, you have fans who sensed a disloyalty and a loss of spirit of competition and a general arrogance by players that, hey, I'm just going to go wherever I want, and it doesn't matter whether I have a contract or whether I've pledged allegiance to a particular team. And that is creating disaffection by fans who do buy tickets and do buy jerseys and do buy NBA league passes. And so, ultimately, the bottom line is this has not been good for the league. It's gone way too far.
Well, look, I think that's displacing your anger if you're a fan, or seriously, if you're a fan, or if you're even a part of the NBA office, you got to understand where you need to place your anger. You're placing your anger in the wrong places. This needs to be something that you need to own up to. When you knew that free agency became a thing, when you knew that players weren't of the 80s where they're going to stay, where the general manager said that they had to stay, that players were starting to gain control. When you saw Michael Jordan finally start to say, I'm taking one-year contracts in the 90s, you should have known what you needed to do in terms of marketing your sport and in terms of way that you're going to project going forward. The NFL did, what, 92, 93, Reggie White and Plan B free agency, they realized players could go wherever they want now. So guess what? We need to counter that by marketing the teams as a whole instead of the individual players. But the NBA, hey, coming off a tape delay and finally seeing it pop with Magic and Bird and then Jordan, said, that's the way. Follow the stars. And look where the stars have taken you instead of you having to counter plan to that by changing how your direction and engine goes. Looking at all that, it's just a simple argument of uniformity versus star power. So I'm not upset at the players because the players are just exercising their freedoms. The fact that they have that power. If you want to get into a situation where you're going to look at the contract like you just did, Acho, and say you need to honor the contract, I agree with that. But that means that the teams have to honor the contract just as well, NBA and NFL. But when you know that that is not a two-sided conversation, when you know that that's not going to be a uniform conversation, then you get exceptions like this. NBA ratings are not down just because of stars moving around. We all know what the NBA finals are going to look like. LeBron, wherever he is, and it was the Warriors or whatever other team, Spurs, it's the same candidate. So now we're going to blame that when it's always been that way? It doesn't make sense.
But, Sal, let me point to a mark of delineation between what you said. You said the players are just exercising their freedom, exercising their power.
Yeah.
There's a difference. See, there's a difference between exercising your freedom and exercising their power. I don't have a problem with players exercising their freedom. I have an issue with players exercising their power. That is the difference. Freedom, LeBron James, free agent. He was free. Freedom, Kevin Durant, free agent. He was free. Power, James Harden, not a free agent. Get me up out of here. But really, my issue and my biggest point of contention with all of this is this. I don't like things being rendered meaningless. I don't like the sport being undermined by the players within the sport. What the heck do I mean? Again, I told y'all 15 to 18, we knew it was the Warriors versus LeBron. So what did that mean? 2,400 games were rendered meaningless. Let's talk football. 2016 Super Bowl, it was the Patriots versus the Falcons. It's 16 or 17, whatever the case may be. The Falcons had the MVP that season in Matt Ryan, the best quarterback playing in the biggest game of the biggest moment, overtime. Matt Ryan didn't even get the ball in overtime because of overtime rules. Matt Ryan was rendered, the NFL's MVP was rendered meaningless. Whenever things in sports are rendered meaningless, they undermine the sport. Player mobility, Marcellus, is rendering games meaningless, and that is why it is bad for the sport.
Yeah, Marcellus, you're right in that it's not the players' fault, and I don't disagree. I don't fault them for exercising whatever they can, whether it's power or freedom. The league did this to themselves because they've continued to shorten contracts because they didn't want to get hung up with paying guys exorbitant numbers way down the road. So in a way, they've done it to themselves, but it still comes back to the same thing. Does it help or does it hurt? We have a credit card that has created a commercial about being able to trade in the jersey that you get in order to get the new jersey because your superstar just left your team and went to another one. And what do we see in that commercial? All these fans pounding their heads on their steering wheels and gnashing their teeth sitting at the breakfast table with their kids because they left. That's a capture of a real emotive thing that is going on with fans across the country. You can't tell me that right now the Houston Rockets aren't looking at James Harden and Russell Westbrook and the team and saying, what? These guys are just up out of here because they decided that they can't get it done here? And do you think that they are going to embrace the next guys that come in? Or are they going to go, you know what, I'm kind of tired of this. Why am I buying into season tickets? Why am I buying into this team when I have no guarantee that the guys that I've fallen in love with are going to stay here?
Yeah, it's interesting, man. The conversation of blaming the teams, blaming the players, or blaming the NBA as a whole, where I really want to put that focus is on the NBA as a whole, where they made a conscious decision because it was beneficial for them in the time that they made that decision to ride their horses, to ride their superstars. And now they're riding their superstars and not liking the results. Well, then that's based on your decision there. The power, the freedom, whatever word you want to use, is the fact that the owners in the middle of the night can use their freedom or their power to make a player go from one city to the other. And now we're going to have this issue because the players are saying, oh, I return fire. I shall do the same thing that you can do as an owner. But no one has a complaint about that. The last point I want to push back on is with you, Acho, saying that if the season is meaningless, then guess what? Your interest is going to wane. I don't know. Last time I checked, I watched college football. You watch college football. You cover college football. You love college football. And if you look at that situation, is it really meaningless? Think about it. If you look at a college football playoff scenario every single year, Clemson, Alabama, then you can throw out six other schools that in the last 6 years have made it. It's Ohio State, Michigan State. Like, it's the same damn dozen, the same dirty dozen. But that college football and this playoff system is not meaningless. It's not a situation where you don't care for it. I think the NBA has a greater problem, but they're trying to put the problem on something that is not the issue. The NBA itself is the issue. Coming up in our big story, Zeke has not eaten up a lot of yards this year. Ugh. We'll tell you if his time is running out with the Cowboys next. Speak for yourself. Back to Speak for Yourself. That was funny. Patriots are 4-5 after their upset win over the Ravens and have now won two straight. Earlier this week, Cam Newton said, quote, "We are a good enough team to be better than what our record displays." Cam added, quote, "I've always believed that we were close." So, Acho, do you agree with Cam that the Patriots are better than the 4-5 record?
I don't get how. No, I don't agree with Cam Newton.
Oh, and you're that
this
guy.
Has been such a trying year for me. No, Marcellus, it's not COVID. It's not relocating to a new city. Mm. It's having to criticize Cam Newton.
Oh.
Like, that's one of the toughest parts of my life this year because I rock with Cam. I rock with Super Cam, everything that Cam stands for. And I rock with my dog. But I got to call a spade, sir. You said it's facts over feelings,
yeah,
so let me speak factually. How in the world are y'all better than your 4-5 record when your 3 touchdowns isn't better than your 4-5 record? Cam, if I'm speaking about you personally. Okay, now let's talk from a large-scale perspective. You all are hit or miss. That is what 4-5 is. You win and you lose. You win less often than you lose. Well, let's look at the season. You beat the Dolphins early on somehow, some way, in a close grudge match. Then you get into a shootout and you lose to the Seahawks. Then you beat the Raiders. Then you lose to the Chiefs. I don't know what this Patriots team is, Sal. And then if you're talking about being better than your 4-5 record, if one of your wins is against the Jets, then it's quite literally impossible to be better than your 4-5 record because that was a gimme. That was a simulated game. You know, when you play in Madden back in the day and you don't feel like playing that game, you just hit the simulate button and it just goes
it
on
just
to
goes
the next.
Auto.
That's all that was. That was a simulated game. So okay. I would actually submit that they might be worse than their 4-5 record. It's not to say that Patriots are not capable of beating teams because we just saw what they did to the Ravens. They are capable of beating teams in close grudge match, fist fight type of games. But anytime there is minimal to no room for error, and that's what the Patriots had. I said this a couple days ago. I'll say this to y'all tuning in. Patriots are 4-0 when they win the turnover battle, and I know you hate this stat, but they are 0-5 when they tie or lose the turnover battle. What that means is they don't even have any room for error. They got to be perfect. You can't bank on this team being perfect week in, week out. That is why they are 4-5. Their record is actually very accurate for the team that they are.
Wow, wow, wow. I always knew that you were a pessimist. Never knew that you were a fatalistic pessimist, like next level. You and Jeff Saturday, two dudes that I love.
Jeff
but two dudes that are on the flip side when it comes to looking at a glass and see if it's half empty or if it's half full. And we look at this situation, oh, the glass is half full. And that's why I support Cam Newton and what he's saying. And what he's saying is actually correct. Some teams are worse than their record. And some teams are better than their record. I'll give you some examples. 13-3 Green Bay last year going into the playoffs. We were like, they're a little worse than that record. But we're going to see what happens. And we saw what happened. They won one game and then they got smoked. Okay, so we knew that. Now, let's look at a situation where you see go back in history a little bit, 2011, a 9-7 Giants team. Oh, my God. Wonder if they're better than that. They went against a perfect Super Bowl.
But are you? Let me ask you. Because it's a good point. You want somewhere good here?
I know. You want to interrupt it? Go ahead.
Is this predicated off winning and losing the Super Bowl?
No, this is predicated off of your record because you took it personal. We said team and record. You went, okay, Cam Newton and his performances. Oh, why'd you do that, Acho? Maybe because you couldn't stick to the script and to the question. But I will because I'm disciplined. Damn it. And so I'm looking at this as you're a 4-5 team, and someone like Acho was like, ugh, doo-doo, y'all only won a virtual game against the Jets. Oh, when you don't know what something is, Acho, put it under the microscope and let's look at it. Let's look at their losses and their wins right now. Only one bad loss. Denver by 6. The rest support what Cam Newton is talking about. They beat 3 6-3 teams. You want to know who they are? The Miami Dolphins. They beat
the Raiders,
and they beat the Ravens. Oh, excuse me, Dougie Fresh. Only loss to the early season perfect Seattle Seahawks. And then you lose to the 49ers with Jimmy G. And we know that Jimmy G in his 4 years as a 49er has only lost 9 games. So losing to Jimmy G when he's out there with the 49ers, okay, I can understand that. My point is this. You are not always what your record says it is. History has shown that. This year has shown that. Imagine that you're the L.A. Raiders. Vegas Raiders. Damn, I'm all Oakland. Vegas Raiders. Vegas Raiders. Are they better than the Chiefs?
No.
Oh, did they beat the Chiefs? Oh, guess what? It doesn't matter always head-to-head matchup. Records and competition can alter your perception like it did to you, Acho. Now it's time to bring in Fox NFL analyst Greg Jennings. I got him on the ropes. So, Greg, you agree with Cam that the Patriots are better than their 4-5 record?
Absolutely not.
Thank you.
I don't. They are 4-5 for a reason. This team has struggled to score points. Acho hit the nail on the head. When you turn the ball over, and you don't give yourself a chance. And this team, a team that struggles to score, they're tied for, or I shouldn't say tied, they're at the bottom tier when it comes to points scored, I think 27th or below in ranking when it comes to points scored. So when you talk about turning the ball over and you can't put up points or you can't produce points, you have the 31st most the 31st worst team in three and out. So that means you don't even really sustain drives. Offensively, they've struggled, and we don't ever do this as players, as coaches, even as media. When we all played, we never got on the plane after a win and said, man, we should have lost that game. We never do that. Ooh, if we were 7-1, we never go in the locker room and be like, we really should be 3-4, guys.
What?
But we always do the inverse. We always say, no, we really should be 8-0. We really should be 9-0. We always do that when we lose the close game, but never when we win it do we say we should have actually lost. So this team's record is what it is because they haven't been able to win in the 60 minutes or more that they've been allotted.
Hey, look, my bad if I had to pull the Green Bay team from last year and get under your skin because I know you got Green Bay in your heart and talk about how that 13-3 was empty. My bad. Well, let me go somewhere else. Let me go back to the Giants. Remember the Giants in 2011? They had a negative 6-point differential. Think about that. They were a 9-17 that had a negative point differential and beat a perfect team. Guess what? They weren't what their record said that they were. So guess what? If you look at this situation, it's the same thing. Greg Jennings, I have been on teams where I've been on the plane like, boy, we shouldn't have won that one. And I've been on games where I'm like, damn, we should have won that one. Who hasn't? That's called competition. I was on an 0-3 team. Turned around, we were 10-6 that same year. I also was on a 4-0 team. We end up being 5-11. Guess what? I've been on both sides of this coast and understanding that it doesn't always add up into the win-loss column because of some breaks, some bad penalties, things that you can't control. You can have a tough record. Oh, God. Houston Texans is a horrible example this year. But let's talk about the Houston Texans. When they first few games, what they have? Kansas City, Baltimore. Mm-hmm. They like, damn, we're better than that. Yeah, you are, but you're not much better than that. But point being, you don't have to be a literalist. You don't have to say the New England Patriots are 4-5. So guess what they are? 4-5. You can actually say, damn, those some close losses. Damn, those some good wins. Maybe you are a little better than your
get record. Get him, Greg. Get him, Greg, so I don't have to.
Yeah, man. Yeah, you ain't so got nothing.
I hear what you're saying, but this is why I disagree with you, Marcellus.
Okay.
Because when you look at the New England Patriots, if they would have won those games, are we having this conversation of them being better or worse? We're not having this conversation. Only when a team doesn't get it done, mm-hmm. when they have had the opportunity to mm-hmm. get it done. Mm-hmm. I don't care what your record is. All I care is what you produce and what you show me. And what they have not shown me is the ability to win games.
I agree.
You want to go back to 2011? You want to go back to 2011 and talk about teams that were better than what they record? We were a 10-6 team to play the year we won the Super Bowl.
Yep.
Were we deserving of that? Yes. Did we end up being a better team? Of course, we got hot. But right now, look at the New England Patriots,
thank you.
They are a 4-5 team.
Can I give you some of this?
It's not a matter. It's not, we're not at the end, so we don't know what they're going to be and what they're capable of. Right now, they are a 4-5 team, period.
Huh. Wow. All I want you to understand is this same team, this same organization has been here before. You want to go back to your years? You want to go back even further? Let's go back to 2001. Do you remember that year? You're a historian. I chose out this conversation. You're a historian. You know the game. They were 5-5. And people like you, if you were a broadcaster then, instead of trying to be an active player, would have went on TV and said, you know who they are? They're just a 5-5 bunch, and they have no future. They are what this is. And then that same team goes out there and wins. What is that?
They had a quarterback.
A Super Bowl
championship. They had a quarterback change.
It's not always.
They inserted the best quarterback ever.
Can we do our job and not just talk X's and O's, but talk the I's and the U's? The I's and the U's is adding on to what everyone else sees because we see it differently because we've been there before. And don't act like you ain't never been there before and say we're a little better than this or we're a little worse than this. Come on, guys.
Let's talk the G's and the E's because it's a Greg and Emmanuel conversation because Marcellus talking crazy. Here's the differentiation that Marcellus is making, Greg, which you and I understand. The rest of the world understands, but Marcellus obviously doesn't. I'm not saying they can't get hot. I'm not the Giants. They got hot. Greg, the year they won the Super Bowl, they got hot. Teams can get hot. The Titans last year, Marcellus, they got hot. Mm. But you're not going to sit here and tell me that they are better or worse than what their record is. The Packers are 13-3 last year. They're one win away from being in a Super Bowl.
Yeah, yeah.
They're 13-3. Like, that's not to say they were better than their record. Big. One win away from the Super Bowl. When I look at this Patriots team, so they got blown out by the Niners, which you tried to paint as a good picture. Jimmy Garoppolo had 2 interceptions that game.
Yeah.
No passing touchdowns.
Yeah.
They got blown out.
He's still a winner, though.
He on the field. They got blown out by, not blown out, they got beat by the Broncos, but to get beat by the Broncos is a blowout.
6 points is
to get beat by that team is a big
one. And what else you got?
Because why? Because they turned the ball over.
They lost by 3 to the Bills. Is that a bad loss?
No, it's not. Well, there are no great, there are no ugly wins. It ain't no pretty losses.
That's where I think that's where we're all disagreeing. Let's be real about this. Strength of schedule is an indicator of what the road ahead is.
That's
true
fair.
Or false?
That's fair.
If there wasn't, if it meant nothing, then they wouldn't talk about strength of schedule all the time. But then when you look at their strength of schedule, you start to realize, man, when you get a win against Miami, when you get a win against the Raiders, when you get a win against the Ravens, you're a good team. And then you only have really one loss where you got to hang your head low and say, damn, why we let Denver come and beat us? I don't hear any other conversation. You could try and exaggerate the 49ers, but Jimmy G just finds a way to win when he's the starting quarterback of the 49ers. So to me, this argument is about y'all don't respect their schedule because to me, it's kind of a difficult schedule for a first-time quarterback in this new
Greg,
situation.
Greg, you're taking years off my life, Greg.
With a new coach and a new organization that was picked up in early July. Come on, guys.
So Marcellus, they have a top 10. They have the top 10 easiest schedule in the league.
Yeah, yeah.
So you want me to feel sorry for them because they have within the top 10 of having the easiest schedule in the league.
Marcellus, I don't know what you're talking
about. I'm sorry. Yes, you play some teams that have 6-3 records. But that doesn't mean that's not telling because you still lost those games.
No, they won those three games. See, that's what I'm talking about. We ain't talking the same stuff. We ain't in the same book. They beat three teams that have a 6-3 record.
But you know, you know what it is, Sal. If you go back in the history books, because I had to do this, you know me. I'm a youngin', so I got to go back and do my research. I went back and I was like, wait, the great Muhammad Ali, he lost some fights?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I was like, wait, Mike Tyson?
Better than
he lost some fights?
Well, we knew
because
that.
The people that beat them, they caught them out of their prime. They caught Ali out of his prime. They caught the Tyson out of his prime. So were you telling me that the Patriots beat the Dolphins in week one before Tua, when Flores was in his first game as his second year as the organization, you telling me that that was a great win? You telling me that when they beat the Raiders, before the Raiders got hot, you're telling me that that's a good win? You can't sit here and classify now that we're 10 weeks in, look at the entire body of work and say, wait, but they beat the Dolphins back in week one.
It's on their season.
That Dolphins team is not this Dolphins team. You're qualifying.
No team is the same week to week. That's why there's only one undefeated team. One undefeated team. I want to say this. How many times have we said this in sports, NBA, NFL, that the conference championship is the real championship this year? Even in the Western Conference, we were thinking that until the Clippers messed up. But the point is, there are times where you can even look at how it's built, the pyramid all the way to the championship, and you can say one rung lower is really that championship. You know why? Because you're talking about the strength of the schedule. You're talking about the strength of the opponent. You're also talking about two teams that maybe the records don't match up, but we know this is the most contention we're going to see in that sport. How come you guys can now apply that to Cam Newton and what he's saying? He's just saying we're close, and being close is we're easily a team that could be 5, 6, maybe even 7 wins. You guys don't see none of that, huh?
I do, but every team in the league feels like that right now.
Oh, really? The Jets do as well. Okay, all right, let's go. I'm done.